This morning to talk about ovary from the water-based activity perspective. The idea of this podcast or series of podcasts is to provide a source of local information to help people enjoying the water and the beach to do it a little bit more safely. So I'm Mandy and I'm the RNLI Water Safety Officer for this area, as well as being crew on the inshore and all-weather lifeboats. I've got John Thompson with me and Ash Fairrigg this morning. John was the harbour master in Ovary for a number of years and runs the Welcome Ferry, which transits people from Burnham Ovary Boathouse out to Scoulthead Island. And Ash Fairrigg runs a sailing school and teaches people how to sail. So let's start with you, John. So John, you're on the ferry going to and from between the boathouse and Scoulthead Island. What sort of things do you see people doing, and why do people come to this area?
I think probably the worst thing I see is people swimming in the middle of the channel with no appreciation that they can't be seen by motorboats or sailing boats, and just having your head sticking out of the water and expecting boats to avoid you is probably not enough. So that's probably the most dangerous thing I see.
So, again, from experience, seeing a head in the water can actually be pretty tricky. You're looking at something that's actually quite small, and especially if they haven't got a brightly coloured hat on or anything, you could easily...
Exactly.
You could easily hit somebody.
I see lots of near misses. I mean, people swimming need to realise that usually... most of the people in the boat are facing the other way. They're facing backwards, not where they're going. And then the person who is looking forward, their view is normally obscured by people sitting in front of them.
Yeah, and the boat itself, I suppose.
Yeah, and again, of course, you know, some sailors have a sail in the way, so they can't necessarily see a swimmer. So although you can swim where you want and swimmers have the right of way, it doesn't guarantee your safety.
No. No, I suppose that's like playing chicken on a bicycle on the road with a lorry.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to come off worse.
Yeah, you may have right of way, but it doesn't keep you safe.
Yeah. And it's not just getting hit by a boat as somebody in the water. There's also the propeller at the back that's turning pretty quickly.
Yep, three very, very sharp, heavy blades spinning around,
Yeah. And they're going to cause really nasty injuries.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to come out of it very well.
No. So in terms of recommendations, just to help swimmers that want to continue swimming in Ovary do it a little bit more safely, being able to see them, so being visible, so wearing something brightly coloured maybe.
Yeah.
A brightly coloured hat maybe.
Yeah, bright swim hat, you get the inflatable
toe float
toes.
Even, you know, you can see them, they're often fluorescent, made from fluorescent material. What about whereabouts to swim in terms of avoiding boats, propellers and all that kind of thing?
I think probably the safest place is just to stay to the edges.
Yeah, out the way of the main channel sort of thing.
And if there's a boat which has gone aground and has landed, it's not normally a good idea to swim behind it because the boat's only going to be going backwards and the person driving the boat may not look. So, yeah, don't swim behind boats if it looks like they're going to go backwards, and just stay to the edges. I mean, it's all pretty easy stuff.
Yeah. Ash, have you got anything to add about swimmers?
When it comes to swimmers? I just think it's just being aware of the dangers rather than just... I mean, it's a bit like looking before you cross a road, is the way I'm looking at it.
Exactly, yeah.
Just stand on the edge of the quay or wherever, or the harbour you're about to swim off, and just have a good look around the local area. And if you see John and his ferry coming down, probably wait till he goes on his next trip, or if you see lots of people launching, because, like, it is the biggest... You'd agree with this, John. It is the biggest hazard to us water swimmers, because we're dealing with mooring buoys in the water, swimmers, other boats, children, everything. There's so much going on, and it's very, very hard to spot people in the water.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%, yeah.
Brilliant. So that's swimmers. What else causes sort of concern whilst you're to and fro between Swordhead?
Overloaded boats is a big thing.
Okay, so overloaded boats, so is this tenders? Is this people going somewhere else, or is this people just having a little tour around the harbour? What do you think between the two of you?
A lot of the issue is that pretty much every small boat is built with more seats than what the boat can actually carry.
Yeah.
So because people think there's somewhere to sit, then you can sit there. Not necessarily. Most of the small boats, take a Terry 385, which is a pretty average,
You see a lot of them.
There's lots of them. I believe they're only rated to 4 people, but you can seat 6 easy.
Okay. Yeah, because you've got you've got 3 seats, 2 in each seat, so
Yeah, and that's sort of an obvious thing for somebody that doesn't know. So Ash, where would you find out how many people your boat's rated for?
Well, basically, a lot of these boats, I think, got a C rating, which in the back of it, which is a little back of the boat, there's a little metal plaque, and it says this boat is not licensed, it's licensed, or this boat's allowed to carry maximum of 4 people plus baggage. Normally it says 4 or 6, and so you normally find that on the back of the boat.
Okay, so that's on a plaque on the back of the boat, so every boat should have that?
All production boats should do, like ones you buy from a factory, but you get other boats that are older that don't have it, and if in doubt, you just need to, I'd recommend going to the boathouse, go around to the back, and asking Max and John, who work there, how many people can my boat take? If in doubt, just ask somebody who knows if it doesn't have that rating. Is that a fair comment, John?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so you could go to Burnham Overy Boathouse, or maybe you could go to a Chandler's.
Yeah, just go anywhere, or there are lots of good forums online where you can just say, I've got a 12-foot boat, built this, and how many should I put in it?
Yeah, okay.
Because that is the most dangerous thing, having an overloaded boat. And we've all done it when we say, oh, we can squeeze one more person in. But people who aren't very experienced with boats and who don't really know about it, I've seen 12 people. I saw 12 people in the summer in a 4-person boat. And they're arguing, when I spoke to them, I said, why are you so overloaded? And they said, oh, well, 6 of them are children under 5. And I was just like, regardless, that still all adds up. And it was, that's even worse.
It's more of a reason to be careful.
So the reason that overloaded boats are dangerous is obviously the helm can't see where they're going.
Yeah.
And the boats aren't designed for that. And the risk of, massively increasing your risk of capsize.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we know that there have been issues with overloaded boats around this area that have capsized.
Yeah.
So we know it happens.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've talked about the plate on the back, making sure that you're going out in a boat that with the right number of people in there. Also, we're talking about boats that capsize. What else could people be doing apart from having a boat with the appropriate number of people in it? What else could helms of boats be doing just to make themselves that little bit safer? Were they to capsize for a different reason other than being overloaded? They've gotten unbalanced for whatever reason.
You absolutely must wear a kill cord.
Yeah.
A kill cord is like the number one big thing that you must do.
2 seconds and can save your life.
Yeah.
That's that easy.
And I've seen a boat in the creek do that, going round and round.
Yeah.
You've seen a boat in the creek?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Someone
had fallen out, or they let it go and it was going around very slowly, but you can understand how it would just, because if you fall out of the boat, it'll come around and get you, because the engine will go over to one side and it'll start going around in circles.
Yes, yeah, which is very disconcerting. I can imagine seeing your own boat
and you do not come out alive in lots of situations, and it's such a simple thing to do, just wear your kill cord. It's literally simple as.
So where you
can. I know it's annoying, and I know it's constricting, and like anybody who does boats on their own, it can be annoying. But like the amount of
You would if you had the boat coming towards you, and it's just your head above the water, you're gonna wish you put on.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely wear a kill cord.
Brilliant. Okay. So kill cords. Anything else?
Buoyancy aids and life jackets. Is a good one. It terrifies me the amount of people that. you know, you can drown in your bath at home.
Yeah, you don't need much water to drown.
It's you know, it's really scary. The especially lots of children in jumping in without life jackets on. And when I was younger, even when we were crabbing on the quay, we used to have to wear life jackets.
Yeah.
Yeah, because even in case you fall in.
Well, the edge can often be slippery, can't you? And you can be standing on the side and in the next.
Wearing a life jacket is just so... Yeah, wearing a life jacket and kilt, two really super simple things. And just, you know, just do it.
And life jackets now are a lot less bulky than
they
used to be.
They keep you warm.
Yeah, you don't really know you're wearing them anymore, do you? Really?
No.
It's kind of... It's the same as putting a life jacket on... a seatbelt on. It's just standard practice now, isn't it? We don't even think about it. We don't find it restrictive anymore. So just get into that mindset with buoyancy aids.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got making sure that you've got the right number of people in your boat, and you're not exceeding the maximum for you that your boat's rated for. We've got using kilt cords. You're clearly highlighting that that's really important, and wearing a buoyancy aid or a life jacket is key.
Yeah,
that's brilliant. So is there anything else that we've covered powered vessels, if you like. Is there anything else? We've got swimmers and powered vessels. Is there anything else that we see regularly in Overy that people would benefit from a bit more awareness, or something that they could do to make the situation safer for themselves as well as everybody else?
I think one thing is thinking about looking at launching boats, I think, because you get a lot of boats being launched when the tide's coming in. It's like a lot of activity, especially on the slipway.
Yes.
You have children crabbing and they're letting their crabs down the slipway, and you've got boats coming in and out, and it can happen when, you know, you're backing a boat down as a small child in the way, and it's just making sure that parents are really aware of the hazards that are going on, because it is a working harbour. There are ferries running, there are businesses running, there's a paddle boards and everything. There are lots of things going on, and there are lots of people here who aren't here because they're on holiday. Some people are working here, and I think it's really important to just understand that, really.
Yeah, and I suppose often, you know, like if we look out the window now at low water, there's hardly anybody about, and then suddenly as the water starts to come in, it's like a real hive of activity, isn't it, for that period when the water's in, and then it goes quiet again.
And I think, the big thing is, especially if you're coming to Overy for the first time and you're just on the land, you're going crabbing, or you're just going for a walk or something, is just be aware that there's a lot of activity in the creek, especially at high water. So if you're on the quay and you're crabbing, just be aware that boats are coming in and coming out, and sometimes it's very tricky for boats to get out of the way of other boats, and, just be aware of what's going on, really.
Yeah, and talking about high water, so you can easily find when the high water is if you've not been at Overy before. You can find the high tide time on the Burnham Overy Boathouse.
On their website and in front of the building.
And on the welcome ferry, is there?
So we post our tide times. There's so many ways of finding out what time the tide is, but it's very easy for us to assume that everybody knows how tides work, where they can be very complicated things. So, have a read up. If you're going to go walking, if you cross water, there's a chance that you may not be able to cross it again in an hour's time. So that's something, if you're going to cross water, maybe perhaps make sure you understand about
Or cross a dry ditch even.
Pretty much.
Cross a sand or anything,
I mean, that's why we get so many people caught off by the tide on Scotland Island. So as we're saying, tidal cutoff is very common in this area. So if you're anywhere between Brancaster Staithe and Clye, a good rule of thumb to follow is from 4 hours before Wells Bar high tide time, make sure you're back at the main part of the beach, dry sand, stroke land, to avoid being cut off by the tide, which is the number one reason for a lifeboat call out in this area. 2 out of 3 people that the Wells volunteer lifeboat crews rescue are cut off by the tide.
I mean, we're very lucky here because we are, you know, not just myself, there's another ferry, and there's lots of... If there wasn't so many people in Overy going to the island, there would be a lot more call out to the island than what there is. So, we're quite lucky here, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're always safe.
No, and there has been, over the last few years, a significant increase in the number of people that are coming to the area. So, you know, the more that we can spread the awareness for people to help themselves keep safe, the better that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think also something else to add for kind of understand that channels can change. I mean, if we go back 3 years, there was two examples of someone who'd been swimming in one location for many years and the channel had changed and they suddenly found themselves in an 8-knot current as opposed to a 2-knot current.
Wow, that would make a big difference.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot to understand with swimming as well. But yeah, just a bit of research, just get some background and, you know.
Yeah, so when you get here, don't launch yourself straight in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything from you, Ash, that
I think I think you covered it really well. Yeah. I think it's just by basically just having 5 minutes just, you know, before you come, just, you know, looking up tide times. And yeah, and if in doubt, just ask. There's lots of local advice around, you know, the boathouse, John and his ferry, you know. There's always someone to ask. It's much better to ask. And we're never going to... If someone asks me how the tides work, I never look at them and I say, you should know this. Because, like, they're tricky things. And not
they are.
Yes.
But there are lots of things that me and you, we work the water the whole time. But in lots of situations in life, we don't know the answer to stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are complicated things.
Yeah.
And it makes no sense in lots of cases. But that's just how it is.
And here, obviously, the tide, it goes out a long old way, and it's not like that everywhere. You know, if you've come on holiday, there's a lot of people who won't have experienced that amount of water movement.
The Mediterranean is a classic, isn't it?
Of course.
You go to the Med for 20 years, and there's hardly any current, and then you come here, and
and that business of, you know, the creeks are narrow, and the water's funneling in, and almost more importantly, funneling back out to sea very quickly. I mean, we have had times where, and you've seen it many times, where people have gone into the water for whatever reason after high tide, near the harbour mouth, and it's very easy to get swept out into the main part of the sea.
It is.
Which is a very dangerous situation. Yeah.
So just as a quick recap, so swimmers then, we've talked a lot about them this morning, keeping near the edges of the main channel, and being seen wearing a brightly coloured hat and having a fluorescent tow float. Keeping away from the back of boats with people in them. Understanding that sailing dinghies may have limited manoeuvrability depending on the wind, so just keeping out of their way. And also keeping well away from the harbour mouth, especially after high tide, when large volumes of water are funnelling very quickly back to the main part of the sea. We do know that swimmers have been swept out into the sea and have had to be rescued, which is a really dangerous situation. In terms of walkers, tidal cutoff is very common here. Good rule of thumb, 4 hours before wells bar high tide time, get back to the main part of the beach, dry sand or dry land. And for powered vessels, really being careful about understanding what the capacity of your boat is and not overloading it. Using the very simple kill cords that are available and wearing a flotation device, either a buoyancy aid or a life jacket. These very simple things can make everything so much safer for everyone. Thank you. If you know anyone that would benefit from hearing this podcast, we'd love it if you'd forward it to them.